you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us wherever you're listening, around the world on the KPCC app or at kpcc.org, or throughout Southern California on one of our many transmitters from Santa Barbara to the Coachella Valley. I hope you'll join me tonight at 6:30. We've had 15 and a half months of difficult time with the pandemic and with political strife in the country. So we created Film We Can Chill, our series where we talk about a movie that I've chosen because I think it's just a great relief and break from what's been going on in the real world. I chose for tonight's conversation the 1980 comedy classic Airplane, and the three creators, the writer-directors of Airplane, are going to be with me live at 6:30 on our virtual event. You'll be able to watch it in your home. Lorna Patterson, who played one of the flight attendants, also joining us, the casting director, who, as you remember from Airplane, the casting of actors known for very serious roles, of course, were all the more funny because of how the film portrayed them. Leslie Nielsen, Peter Graves, Robert Stack, so many others. Of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with a great performance as the co-pilot. So we're going to talk about Airplane tonight at 6:30. We invite you to join us by going to kpecc.org/in-person. I've got a bunch of clips, some of the funniest segments from the film that we'll be sharing as well. 6:30, kpecc.org/in-person. Well, we bring you the very latest now on COVID-19 with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist at UC San Francisco Medical Center. He's been joining us for the past 15 and a half months. Dr. Chin Hong, wonderful to have you with us again.
Thanks for having me on, Larry. Always a pleasure.
Hope you had a terrific Memorial Day weekend and that you're able to get out, do more now that COVID-19 is a bit back on its heels. Let's talk about what we're seeing in the trends. You see anything at all that is cause for concern as we are set to enter the summer?
I think the main thing that I'm seeing that's bugging me a little bit, well, actually a lot, is that we continue to see deaths. Sure, we've, we're probably seeing substantially fewer deaths now, but the deaths are occurring primarily in unvaccinated individuals. And I think one of the stories and narratives that's emerging is that people really feel that sense of loss even more when their loved ones die in the face of this optimism and everyone moving forward with life pre-2020. And, you know, you almost feel a sense of guilt in the family members that, that they missed out on that vaccination. So I think that is a tragedy when we have such amazing amounts of vaccines that are available right now, and we're doing so much to incentivize unvaccinated individuals to get that shot.
So let's talk about the distribution that President Biden announced this morning, where he said that 75% of unused vaccine here in the U.S. will be distributed internationally, most through the U.N.-backed COVAX Global Vaccine Sharing Program. The goal is to release 80 million vaccine doses globally by the end of June. Obviously, with the huge need around the world, that's by no means going to solve the problem, but 80 million still sounds like a significant contribution.
Yes, it certainly does. But again, I'm really excited about that announcement by the Biden administration, yet it's probably not going to be enough. And also, not all the vaccines will be released immediately, since many of the vaccines still haven't been formally endorsed by the FDA. For example, AstraZeneca, and we know millions of those doses are sitting unused so far. Novavax hasn't been approved yet, but it will, particularly, I think, affect countries where they're seeing big surges right now. But it's only part of a multifaceted strategy that I think we have to participate in. Of course, that, you know, we know about, you know, supporting the release of patents to allow the recipe for the vaccines to be sent to other places, generic companies that can make them. But we also need materials, raw materials. We need technical know-how. The recipe is only as good as the people who know how to make the cheesecake. So I think all of these things need to be really put into play before we can even make a dent into the tragedy that's happening around the world right now.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, and we welcome your questions for the calls. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on our AirTalk Facebook page. Right now, Cal OSHA's board is meeting to look at what its workplace coronavirus safety rules will be starting June 15th, when California does away with its restrictions on capacity and essentially drops all the COVID-19 related restrictions. There are still questions about masking and if there are going to be any other workplace rules related to COVID that will be in place even with June 15th's arrival. Dr. Chin Hong, what do you think Cal OSHA should do when it comes to workplace rules?
Well, I think the responsibility of Cal OSHA is to protect the employees or workers. And, you know, at first, when I was thinking about this, you know, looking forward towards June 15th, I was thinking, wow, everybody would probably be the same in the workplace as well as in private homes or outdoors. But it's turning out not to be the case, primarily because in customer-facing workplaces like restaurants, groceries, stores, there'll be that mix of visitors, unvaccinated folks, and putting possibly unvaccinated employees at risk. So I think where Cal OSHA is probably going to come down is having masks still as the baseline or the default, and then you can take off the mask if the employer can verify that a group of employees, for example, are all vaccinated in the indoor setting. I think in the outdoor setting, they're probably going to be more relaxed in terms of not having masks, except if you're having a huge crowd of, say, greater than 10,000 people. But I think that's probably where it's going to land. And they may reduce or go away with social or physical distancing, but that will probably, it's anticipated that will lag what we'll see on June 15th. Some people think July 31st will be the time when social distancing will go away in the workplace.
So masking might still be there. I wonder, though, could there be latitude given for fully vaccinated employees who just don't want a mask? And if they can prove that they're fully vaccinated, should they have that option to not have to wear a mask at work if that's their choice?
Totally. I think if you are vaccinated and you're in a closed loop workplace, there's no reason why you should be wearing your mask. And I think Cal OSHA will allow that to happen in the workplace. Again, with the customer facing mixed populations, visitors, et cetera, coming into contact with potentially unvaccinated employees, that's probably not going to change for the foreseeable future.
I'd like to ask our AirTalk listeners, what do you think Cal OSHA should have as its rules? If you were on its board, what would you recommend for places of employment when it comes to COVID-19 regulations? Would you remove all of them? Would you still ask everyone to mask at indoor workplaces? Would you allow people who verify that they have been fully vaccinated to go without masks? We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Chris in La Quinta asked, what is the actual COVID-19 mortality rate for the U.S.? The current 7-day moving average of new deaths, which is 438, has decreased 13% compared with the previous 7-day moving average. As of May 26th, I guess we don't have a number fresher than this on the CDC's website, but a total of 589,547 COVID-19 deaths have been reported. Dr. Chin Hong, do you think that in the U.S. that count is likely pretty close to accurate? Because we hear in other parts of the world it could potentially be undercounted by half.
I think at this point it is probably going to be fairly accurate for deaths and hospitalizations, but again, not for cases, because many people are not getting tested. And, you know, rightfully so, I think, for majority, because again, as you know, and I'm sure many people and listeners have realized that colds are coming back into vogue right now. I know a bunch of people and families who, you know, who've been having a run of colds, and we haven't had colds for like a year now. So I think it's kind of a novel thing and a bummer. So because of all of this admixture of symptoms, people think, oh, it's a cold. I think those absolute cases are being undercounted, but you can't dispute if somebody dies from COVID, and that's definitely gone down substantially from a year ago, and hospitalizations.
Diane in West Los Angeles, good to have you with us. I understand you work on film production sets. Your question for Dr. Chin Hong.
Yes, my question is that even if you're double vaccinated, they're not, I think it'd be easier and more economical for production to ask for your verification of inoculation. As it stands now, you have to have a test within 72 hours of entering a set, and you have to be reimbursed for the cost of the test, which they have at $200, and for your time, which is $200. So for each person on the crew, it's costing a production company an additional $400, despite the fact that you might already have your COVID inoculation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, great question, Dr. Chin Hong.
That's a great question, Diane. And I think that the industry needs to probably get in line with where I think the CDC guidance and healthcare professionals are moving, which is not to do testing in vaccinated folks, except for certain very unique situations. So healthcare workers may still need to be tested, people in prisons, homeless shelters, et cetera, but not probably for the majority of individuals who have been fully vaccinated, particularly since, again, upper respiratory tract infections, regular colds coming back with a vengeance. And I think it's going to lead to a lot of confusion and a lot of costs, as you point out, Diane.
All right, Diane, thanks. 866-893-KPECC, the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Barbara in Westminster wonders what is the level of effectiveness of the Moderna vaccine against some of the newer variants. I would guess, Dr. Chin Hong, it's pretty good looking at what we're seeing in the overall COVID rates.
Yeah, so the Moderna vaccine, like the Pfizer vaccine, they have exceptional coverage and protection against the variants, all of the variants. And as people know, the variants have undergone a name change now. So we don't call it the UK variant or the South African variant anymore. We call it the Alpha, Beta, Gamma. So I think we all have to learn Greek. But essentially, these vaccines are all going to be very effective against these variants, and particularly against the most serious consequences, which are death and hospitalizations and serious disease.
All right, 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Our producer, Matt, says members of fraternities and sororities will be particularly well-suited to the renaming. 866-893-KPECC. Barbara in Silver Lake wonders about the necessity or the development of booster shots for people who have compromised immune systems who might not have had as robust a response to the first round of COVID vaccination as perhaps other people?
That's a great question from Barbara, and a work in progress. It's anticipated that immunocompromised individuals and perhaps very old individuals, maybe over the age of 80, we're not really sure exactly what age group, they may be the populations that may require a booster shot. We don't know yet when and at what frequency. But for the general population, we don't think that efficacy will wane too much. Of course, the original trial participants in the tens of thousands are still being followed, and they have a head start of the general population by about a year or so. So, but for the immunocompromised folks, I think we don't know yet. It's likely that they will require a booster shot.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, with your questions for UC San Francisco's Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist, joining us on AirTalk. Chris in Long Beach says, I'm concerned because I know there are going to be a number of block parties on the 4th of July. I'm worried that these events are premature, could lead to a super spreader event, especially with variants. Do you think that these are advisable? Well, one thing to keep in mind is, you know, those block parties, which are outdoors, are going to be following 2.5 weeks or so of no capacity limits on even indoor large-scale events. So, Dr. Chin Hong, why? I guess I'm trying to figure why a block party that's outdoors would be high risk compared to that.
I think, you know, I understand Chris's concerns, but for right now in California, and again, things may change, and I'm always humbled by this virus. Right now, because of the combination of natural immunity, particularly in Southern California, as well as vaccine-induced immunity, we have a very powerful force field right now that will protect folks in that outdoor block party setting.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll continue our conversation. We'll take more listener calls coming up momentarily. It's AirTalk on 89.3. Back in a minute. It's Air Talk on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle. We're joined by Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF Medical. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. We have a question from Donna in Fullerton. I'm a parent, wondering about how best to keep kids who are unvaccinated safe with everything opening up.
That's a great question from Donna, and one that I get asked a lot, actually. I think that for right now, again, for the reasons we spoke about in California with natural immunity plus vaccine immunity, it is generally safe in an outdoor setting for kids under 12. However, in an indoor crowded setting, it may, you know, be a risk-benefit calculation that each parent will have to make. So you think about who the child is. Does the child have immunocompromising condition? Does the child have congenital heart disease? Any comorbidities? And for those kids in particular, you may probably definitely want to mask up, of course, over the age of 2, because under 2, we don't mask, or avoid those activities. For example, you know, if you can afford it, maybe not take the kid on Saturday morning grocery shopping in that situation once things are opened up a little bit more in California.
Renee says our church pastor has been eagerly preparing our church building for a return to in-person worship. This is an African-American Pentecostal church comprised mostly of older African-American women with underlying health conditions, as well as a whole bunch of unvaccinated little kids under the age of 12. I heard on NPR, Renee says that even with vaccination rates high among white people and infection rates low, that doesn't mean it's necessarily true for other members of society. So she wonders about, particularly for Black faith communities, about whether there should be extra precautions when returning to in-person worship.
That's a great question, Larry, and something I've been thinking about as well. You know, we think about these numbers that look really optimistic in California for vaccination rates, but they don't equally apply to all communities. So I think we have to think about that when we think about the safety in a particular environment. And again, coming back to the question that Donna asked about kids under 12, there are two reasons to think about protecting kids with masks. They certainly protect them against disease and infection, but you also want to prevent them from spreading it to unvaccinated household members in their own communities. So I think to that point, you'd want to be extra safe in those indoor settings.
866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You can also tweet at AirTalk with your question. Let's see. We have a question. Is the recent uptick in new COVID infections and more important hospitalizations in the UK concerning, since their vaccination rates are somewhat similar to ours?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question and an interesting point that's being raised. There has been an uptick in the UK in certain geographic areas, I think, particularly in the northwest of England, and it's been traced to the Delta variant, the variant first described in India, the B.1.617 variant. But the UK is a little bit different from the US. There is a mixture of vaccine types, and they are a little bit much more AstraZeneca being used, fewer proportionally speaking of mRNA vaccines like Pfizer, Moderna. So many people think that the US is probably going to be in a little bit better shape when it comes to some of these scarier variants circulating around the world.
And do we know whether those who are getting serious COVID-19 in the UK are vaccinated or not?
I think that question is still being worked out. But, you know, as we've seen in other countries too, like Chile and in the Seychelles, the most vaccinated country on earth, it's thought that most of the folks who are getting disease are still the unvaccinated individuals.
All right. Laura in Burbank says, if you're on medication for breast cancer, how do they know that the vaccine won't interfere with medications, and especially since there aren't long-term studies?
That's a great question that Laura asks. And many people also ask that based on other medications they're taking. So far, you know, we haven't seen, and pharmacologists and pharmacists don't think there is much of a drug interaction with the vaccine to reduce the efficacy of chemotherapy or any medications that people are using. The only aspect I would want to remind Laura about is that some folks with cancer, transplants, et cetera, may not respond quite as well to the vaccine. So you may want to be a little bit more cautious, particularly in crowded areas, and continue to wear masks. But most individuals like that already take extra precautions anyway. So this is just a reminder to that population.
Tammy in West L.A., back to the Cal OSHA board meeting taking place today to determine what the rules should be come June 15th for the workplace. Tammy asked, for people who have chronic respiratory issues, could Cal OSHA suggest that employees have proper air filters for those? Also wonders what you would suggest employees who are in closed workplaces can do to help protect themselves.
Oh, that's a great question. So it is anticipated that Cal OSHA will require employers to provide high-quality masks to employees, including respirators, so N95 masks, if needed. But there hasn't been any additional or anticipated wording around filtration or ventilation. But in terms of things that people can do in a small environment, similar to what you can do at home for additional protection, which is to see if the workplace can have a portable HEPA filter, if the ventilation is not reliable. These are additional interventions that workplaces can take.
I wanted to ask you before we close, Dr. Chin Hong, about Dr. Fauci saying that COVID-19 mRNA vaccines could help lead to an effective HIV vaccine. What is the potential there?
I think the potential is huge because it really cuts down on all of the testing and development of vaccines, because it's essentially cutting and pasting. Once you know the sequence of what you're trying to get to, you just essentially cut and paste the recipe for the particular code you want to make. You deliver the recipe to the cell, so the cell starts making whatever part of the HIV cell in the life cycle you want it to make, and you see those antibodies then protect the individual from getting more serious disease. So essentially, it has so many applications beyond even HIV to even malaria, TB, Lyme disease, herpes, influenza. These have all been proposed. And the even though this technology has been decades in making, people a little bit shy about using it until it's been so widely successful in COVID that people are going to try it in many, many other kinds of infections where vaccines have been very, very elusive.
Dr. Chin Hong, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir. We sure look forward to talking with you next week, and have a great weekend coming up.
You too, Larry. Always a joy. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, where he's infectious disease specialist and he's professor of medicine at UCSF.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win, and the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.